the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Loads of old Rame shout of Donald Trump today at Davos. Before we start hearing some clips from it, and before we talk to Tom Carstensen from Denmark and our expert on war, the Assistant Professor in the History of War at UCD, Edward Burke, Marion McKeown, as our regular US contributor, can you summarise for us, please, in as tight and concise a manner as possible, this hour of plus of Ramesh from Trump today?
Well, first of all, he was introduced by Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, a gushing tribute to him, followed by a standing ovation as he entered the room. He then kicked off pretty much with a greatest hits of his last year, claiming all kinds of slightly implausible numbers and data. Core inflation is 1.6%. Fourth quarter growth of 5.4% is predicted. Let's see if he gets to that. Stock market record 52 in a year, blah, blah, blah. He then hit Europe pretty quickly, saying that parts of Europe, the EU, weren't recognisable anymore, that his friends come back from places and go, I don't even recognise it, and that Europe isn't heading in the right direction. He referenced the Green New Scam, said that, blamed Sleepy Joe, said that the Europe was foolishly following Joe Biden with mass migration, and that parts of Europe were being destroyed before our very eyes as a result. And then he got into, I think, what I suspect was the meat of it, because everybody wants to hear about Greenland. And it was a very sort of churlish, whiny, half a step back from where he was, saying that he wants immediate negotiations to purchase Greenland, and that the big, beautiful piece of ice, he would only accept full ownership of it. He said only the US could protect Europe, Greenland, Denmark from Russia and China. And he sort of ruled out using military force, but said he would remember, we will remember, if allies stand in the way. He said we probably, just the direct quote is, we probably won't get anything unless we use excessive force and strength. And then said, I don't have to use force. I don't want to use force. I won't use force. Now, that would obviously depend, I think, on how he defines force. And then he said, Denmark was ungrateful for America's efforts. And then he did the classic ugly American in a pub in Europe, where he said basically Europe would be speaking German or Chinese, but for America. He falsely claimed that that America owned Greenland after the World War II, and that they gave it back to Denmark. That never happened. Truman had negotiations with Denmark about buying it that lasted half an hour, and then they were dropped immediately. So there, again, a lot of misleading stuff. And then he's saying all we are asking for is Greenland, because you can't defend it, meaning Europe. If there's a war, much of the action will take place on that piece of ice. You know, again, and then spoke about the Golden Dome. I think that, and he also said again that he would only accept title and ownership of the territory, not a lease agreement, saying who the hell wants to defend the license agreement. So you had that kind of a mix of where he's saying that, he also, I thought this was a bit of an implicit threat. What a great power, much greater than the people even understand, talking about his seizing of the president of Venezuela, and that they found that out 2 weeks ago in Venezuela. So he's kind of almost saying, look, I'm not going to use force, but I took it that there are other things I can do, and calling for the immediate negotiations. But, you know, realistically, very briefly, is America willing to pay $800 billion for a piece of ice when it already has all of the benefits that would accrue through ownership? Trump is the only one who seems to want to own it. And I think his saying, I won't use force, I would take that with a pinch of salt, because I think what he might do, this is my prediction, is that they have 16 unused military bases in Greenland. He could send a surge of 10,000 troops there perfectly legally, and then do like a Gulf of Mexico, call it Donland or something, and he would have the optics then that he wanted. So I think it'll be very interesting to see how these full immediate negotiations play out.
John says, how spineless are the European attendees at Davos to actually give Trump a standing ovation? Why didn't anyone challenge his many inaccuracies and lies? Let's just hear a little bit of what he had to say about his intentions towards Greenland.
And then after the war, which we won it big. Without us, right now you'd all be speaking German and a little Japanese, perhaps. After the war, we gave Greenland back to Denmark. How stupid were we to do that? But we did it. But we gave it back. But how ungrateful are they now? It's the United States alone that can protect this giant mass of land, this giant piece of ice, develop it and improve it and make it so that it's good for Europe and safe for Europe and good for us. And that's the reason I'm seeking immediate negotiations to once again discuss the acquisition of Greenland by the United States, just as we have acquired many other territories throughout our history, as many of the European nations have. They've acquired. There's nothing wrong with it. This would not be a threat to NATO. This would greatly enhance the security of the entire alliance, the NATO alliance. The United States is treated very unfairly by NATO.
Okay, some of Trump there, and he's speaking in Switzerland, where, of course, the main language just happens to be German. We're joined by one of those ungrateful Danes that he referred to. Tom Carstensen is a regular contributor to us from Copenhagen. Tom, what's the view in Denmark today as to that performance by Trump in Davos?
I'm going to have to start by apologising that I might sound more tired than I normally do to the listeners, because my head, he's doing my head in. It's just a wild range of absolute craziness and things that aren't real. We would be speaking German. We speak German. It's our biggest trading partner. No, they didn't come in after a minute and helped Denmark in the Second World War. It took a couple of years. I'm kind of lost for words now. I used to not be, but it's just insane the stuff he's saying, that they gave it back. No, they didn't. What happened was that the Danish ambassador in the United States said, listen, you can build a base there. During the war, he made a decision himself, because the Danish government was taken over by the Nazis. So he made a decision there. And again, before was mentioned that there you could put in 10,000 troops. They have had 5,000 at one point. They have 150 now. I've been there. There was 150 people and a Polar Fox is what I saw at Thule Base. What was that, 15 years ago? I mean, they can put people there. No one will stop them. We are happy to have them. It's not like, I don't know what's the deal, but it must be some kind of, he wants to feel important. He needs to own stuff, but that must be his background in real estate or something. I don't really understand what's going on in his head. I doubt anybody does, unless you're a psychiatrist.
Let's bring in Edward Burke, assistant professor in the history of war at UCD. I suppose he at least said today that there will not be a physical invasion to take control of the country, but that's today. God knows what he might say tomorrow or Friday or Saturday as his mind changes again. But what was your interpretation? Are there other means of war other than invasion that he might use to try and take control of the land?
Well, certainly, I think, you know, I think what we can expect is further attempts of intimidation of Denmark and of Europe. I think the Trump administration believed that they've gained a lot from bullying Europe in the summer, not least a very one-sided trade agreement that sort of punishes Europe without any retaliation from the EU. So I think they believe that Europe is weak and vulnerable and that they can bully Europe. So it wouldn't surprise me if perhaps we do see more naval activity, perhaps in the North Atlantic, looking for, you know, sort of excuses and opportunities to try and project more force and intimidate Denmark in the coming months without an actual sort of, expeditionary invasion of Greenland itself. So, I mean, what I took from the speech was, well, it was extremely menacing. I mean, he bullyingly mocked Macron. He mocked the Swiss president. I think he believes that she's a prime minister, she's president. He went through a sort of litany of how he had humiliated European leaders in the previous months and therefore would continue to apply pressure until he gets what he wants. So I think, you know, the Danes and indeed European NATO should take nothing for granted. This man is a person who has no relationship with the truth whatsoever. And indeed, he just made stuff up as his speech went on. He vastly exaggerated the US defense budget. He completely lied about the US's commitment in terms of financial commitment to NATO. It's Europe who provides the majority of funding for military assistance to Ukraine, not the United States. So it's just kind of exaggeration, our lie after lie, exaggeration, etc. It was actually a very disturbing speech overall in terms of how unhinged, frankly, it came across.
And did you get the impression...
attack on President Truman, etc.
Yeah, did you get the impression, Edward, that he really is, at this stage, really keen on the idea of imperial ambition in the way that he was citing America's past in that regard, and indeed also telling some European countries, you used to do it, almost as if they should do it again?
Yeah, he sort of mocked Europeans for being losers, essentially, for giving up their respective empires, which is, you know, quite staggering, given that the United States, not least both Eisenhower, Kennedy, etc., stood up against European imperialism, including in Suez, 1956, Algeria in the 1960s, and really pushed Europeans to give up their empires, not least John F. Kennedy himself. So it's quite remarkable to see him sort of, you know, point to mock Europeans, attack the Swiss, you know, call the British stupid, etc. In a speech where, you know, and some people were afterwards, you know, including Nigel Farage, and others saying that this was actually a, you know, more conciliatory approach from Donald Trump. I actually thought it was entirely menacing and very disturbing. I don't take his assurances about not using force against Greenland as 100% guarantee that he's taken that off the table.
And indeed, Tom Carstensen, is there a sense in Denmark that this really has nothing to do with security, but it's about gaining access to rare earth minerals?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, it has. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I speak to several MPs in Denmark that I know, and yeah, absolutely. It is dawned on people that this is not about that. I mean, the whole Venezuela thing, well, how long were they in before he said, oh, yeah, by the way, it was about the oil? There's a lot of rare earth minerals in Greenland. Yeah, of course it's about that. But the thing is, again, they are allowed to invest in mining and whatever. No one would stop them. The Danes and the Greenlandic people would much prefer the American companies to do it than Russians or Chinese. So, yes, absolutely, it's about that as well. And again, he can just ask, where can I put this and this and these and these and this base there and whatever? He would not be refused. But it's I don't know, it seems megalomaniac at some point, to be honest. Because, yes, but just to be honest, Denmark's not going to back off. I mean, I just saw there was just a press conference recently, a half an hour ago, with the Danish Minister for Foreign Affairs and also the Defense Minister. We're not going to back off. And yes, if that, I think he's going to, I hope sincerely it's going to end up in some sort of deal. They get some more access to whatever they want, and he can send over BlackRock and Vanguard or whoever is going to do that. But it's not really feasible, clearly, because it's very cold, and the climate there is very hard to work in. But I hope it's going to end somewhere there, because no, we don't want to fight the Americans. We're like the oldest ally of them, probably with the Irish. I think 200 years ago we started being an ally of America, and we've gone to several wars with them. Some of them clearly not that great, like twice Iraq and also Afghanistan and whatnot. So it's the Danes. It's ridiculous. Not ridiculous. It's just kind of we're just baffled. Like, how can you be so disrespectful to people who have per capita lost more people in some of the later wars than most of the countries? I think it's only the UK, not even America, but the UK that has lost more.
Okay, let's hear more of this speech. Can you imagine if Joe Biden had made these mistakes in relation to Greenland?
They got to get that war stopped because too many people are dying, needlessly dying. Too many souls are being lost. It's the only reason I'm interested in doing it. But in doing it, I'm helping Europe, I'm helping NATO, and I've until the last few days when I told them about Iceland, they loved me. I don't know that they'd be there for us. They're not there for us on Iceland, that I can tell you. I mean, our stock market took the first dip yesterday because of Iceland. So Iceland's already cost us a lot of money.
Four mentions of Iceland. If Joe Biden had done that. But there's also stuff in it which is deeply sinister, because Marion has already mentioned this. The belief that the Trump administration seems to have that it can tell Europe where it's going wrong in relation to social and cultural issues.
This afternoon I want to discuss how we have achieved this economic miracle, how we intend to raise living standards for our citizens to levels never seen before. And perhaps how you too and the places where you come from can do much better by following what we're doing, because
certain places in Europe are not even recognizable, frankly, anymore. They're not recognizable. And we can argue about it, but there's no argument. Friends come back from different places. I don't want to insult anybody and say, I don't recognize it. And that's not in a positive way. That's in a very negative way. And I love Europe, and I want to see Europe go good. But it's not heading in the right direction. In recent decades, it became conventional wisdom in Washington and European capitals that the only way to grow a modern Western economy was through ever-increasing government spending, unchecked mass migration, and endless foreign imports. The consensus was that so-called dirty jobs and heavy industry should be sent elsewhere, that affordable energy should be replaced by the Green New Scam, and that countries could be propped up by importing new and entirely different populations from faraway lands.
Tom Carstensen, as a European, what do you make of that?
Oh, Jesus Christ, there's so many things in my head right now. It's about to explode. Listen, if you look at America today, we're talking about a country that used to be, Detroit used to be the biggest, one of the greatest cities in the world. It's completely gone, or completely smashed. There's no welfare state. People work at two or three jobs. A lot of people are not, and they are on fentanyl, or you see people standing bent forwards. There was actually a satirical video made by Greenlandic people saying, American culture coming to Greenland, where they were kind of impersonating some of these poor souls that are completely screwed over by the opiate crisis. So to hear him say that they have the best things, whatever. I mean, I'm pretty sure if you ask the American Native Americans, I'm fairly sure they don't think it's gone that great. And if you ask the Inuits of Greenland, they don't want to be part of that either. It's like he's living in a different world, and I'm getting so angry, I'm trying not to curse.
Okay, Marion McKeown, what do you make of what he's saying? Because as Thomas alluded to, you look at all of the metrics for life expectancy, quality of life, everything. Europe is doing way better than the United States.
Yeah, but that doesn't suit Trump's reality, doesn't suit Trump's arguments. Any argument Trump made during that speech could have been instantly deflated and utterly contradicted just by the application of basic facts. He is not dealing in a world of facts at the moment. And a lot of this, I think, is a deflection and a distraction from Ukraine, because even his comments on Ukraine, the US has done nothing. Donald Trump has done nothing to help Ukraine since he became president. He has done the opposite. They haven't, like any weapons that Ukraine has got, any US weapons, Europe paid top dollar for them and then passed them on to the Ukrainians. Donald Trump has not donated one cent in either economic aid, humanitarian aid, any kind of aid, or indeed military aid from America since he became president. All of that was passed by Joe Biden during his presidency, and that was even pretty meagre by my assessment.
Okay.
So he really hasn't done a lot. I think we just need to stick with the facts when you hear this kind of thing. As I say, anything that he said is instantly, you just look at the facts and you see the discrepancy between the two.
And very briefly, Edward Burke, this has diverted attention from the Epstein files, but also it has diverted attention, hasn't it, from Russia intensifying its war against Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, look, Steve Witkoff was in Davos today. I believe he's now going to go to Moscow quite shortly. The danger here, actually, is that we've another attempt to try and strong arm Zelensky into effectively what Washington wants, which is a surrender to Russian demands, not least the annexation of territory, some territory that Russia doesn't hold already in Ukraine. So I think this is going to increase in the next weeks. I'm very concerned about that. I think we're going to go back to a situation where the cards are going to be stacked completely against President Zelensky, and there's going to be extraordinary pressure put on Zelensky. The problem that Europe has is that, yes, Europe has stepped up enormously in terms of military assistance, and was always sort of paying the majority of the overall assistance to Ukraine. But of course, Ukraine still needs that intelligence, that technical edge, that assistance, that targeting, technology that the United States really can only offer right now. So Europe is still in an enormous bind on this. But I think that unfortunately, Europe really cannot bow down to the bullying that we've seen from the Trump administration overall anymore, because the consequences, we just witnessed them, which is complete and utter contempt for European leaders and for European society writ large. And of course, support for extremists within Europe itself. You know, J.D. Vance, Vice President J.D. Vance, talking up the AfD in Germany, or Marine Le Pen in France, etc. And also, you know, very much backing those who wish to destroy the European Union. So look, Ireland and other countries are going to have to make some choices soon. I've noticed a number of countries have already refused to come out and said they're not going to join the International Board of Peace that Donald Trump has established in recent days, which is pretty much an attempt to completely relegate and sideline the United Nations. Ireland hasn't had an answer on that yet. I think, like Denmark, Norway, France, etc., we should roundly reject that and do it very quickly.
Edward Burke, Assistant Professor in the History of War at UCD, Tom Carstensen from Denmark, and our own Marion McKeown. Thank you all very much.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.